gonna spit it out, ain't y'all? Off the industry. Fuck all these cornball rappers. Real hip hop. The real heads getting crunk off the jump off. Chunks them on the floor, took the tough loss like tough love. Suckers got stomped off. Pause when I dumped off. I'm cooking these lanes and getting sushi, then serve raw. I analyze the game and I found flaws. Went against the grain when I ground jaw. Swishing like I'm jammed the ground ball. See the balls, I'm spitting the stout jaw.
And the sound of Charlottesville's own Spit It Out Inc. coming out over your airwaves on 94.7 WPVC at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning can only mean one thing. No, you're not still hallucinating from the night before. It's yet another episode of Homegrown, a show about local art. And we're here with your host, who is both a baller and a shot caller, Leslie M. Scott Jones. And
you know, just because you said that, I think I need my own theme music. Just like traveling around with me, you know, whenever I walk into a room, some like completely dope beat plays, you know, just cause.
Don't you already?
Yeah, but it's in my head. I want other people to hear it.
I don't think it's just in your head, because you walk in and I certainly hear.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, well, do tell. That's
Cindy,
lovely.
You're broadcasting even when you do not know it.
Okay, we'll talk later if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but okay.
So we're going to start today's show the way we usually start today's show, or our regular shows, with a parental advisory. At some point in this show, we may say the word pendulous. Pendulous.
You're going to work that in.
I'm not saying that I'm going to work that in. What? How do you not understand this concept?
Well,
it is a parental advisory. We may say the word pendulous. I'm going to try hard not to say the word.
Oh, really?
Pendulous, because we are advised, because it's a word. It's such.
Right.
It's, yeah. So
it's a word.
Those wonderful parents trying to hide their precious children's, their loved ones. From the horrors.
You said that wrong. You pronounced the whole word. It's supposed to be chirons.
Chirons?
Chirons.
I can pronounce it. I was blinded and distracted.
By my brilliance?
By your soundtrack.
Yes.
I was grooving with it.
That's awesome.
And children's is what came out. That's what fit with your soundtrack.
Oh, okay. I got to change my soundtrack.
I think so. I'm used to it now. You want to change things up on me. What is up with that?
Yes, I do. I got to keep you on your toes.
Oh, you so already keep me on my toes. This is not something you need to exert effort for, trust me.
All right. Clinton, who is our first guest today?
Our first guest today, which we were very pleased and proud to have with us, local artist Russell Richards. How you doing?
Hey, good. I was just looking up the word pendulous, actually. Sorry if you heard me, like, you know, chattering in the background over here, but thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for being here. Now, I'm tempted to call you a multiple media artist. Does that?
Yeah, that would be a pretty good description.
That work? Because you seem to be rather peripatetic with your art. That is to say,
I don't know what that word means either. Give me the dictionary.
But I have no. There was no warning on that word. I can say that.
What is it with you and the words today?
What?
Stop confusing our guests.
There are words we can
see,
use.
I need
words.
An encyclopedia over here, specifically the letter P, right? Like.
So I was talking to another artist recently, and he was saying that he really believed in artists challenging themselves and doing different things and always exploring the next thing. And I think of you as really a prime example of that.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, when I first met you, which was years, so full disclosure, Russell and I have known each other for a while. When I first met you years ago, you had done a lot of puppetry.
Yeah.
And you were doing, and you were working on, you were focusing on mask work, right?
Right.
And then you moved beyond that. So a while ago, you decided to turn to figure drawing, right?
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Sure. Let's just finish that first story. I did some masks for one of your productions.
Yes, you did.
I did a production of Antigone, and I did some papier-mâché masks for it.
And I was very pleased with
them. Well, thanks. And actually, one of which later showed up in a We Are Star Children video. Did you know that? You're joking. Nope. It just, like, years later, it just kind of appeared. So I was as surprised as you are.
Nice. No art like recycled. So this wasn't even planned?
No, not at all.
Oh, I just watched the video, and it was like,
oh, that was a mask I made. For Clinton, yeah.
Wow.
Must have been floating around Live Arts.
And they just, okay, yeah.
So what was the question again?
The question was, a while ago, you decided to...
Do figure drawing. Right,
Can you talk about, like, what went into that decision?
Oh, wow, that was a whole long story. I'll try to give you the short version. All right, I used to work in a very different style. It was kind of more childlike and Picasso, sort of expressionistic and like...
Yeah, I remember that. It was a very gripping style. Yeah.
Yeah, and actually I did that for a long time, like maybe 15 years. And then one summer, I actually broke both my arms in a bike wreck. Okay, so I had...
Whoa, what?
Yeah, you didn't see me back then. I was sort of like walking around town with like two big casts on my arms. It was awful. And so I couldn't draw for 3 months, and when I kind of came back to it, to drawing again, I couldn't really conjure the old thing anymore. It just seemed to me like sort of tapped. It's like you were saying, like art has to be investigational, right? It has to be like you always have to be pushing yourself into some new territory. And I don't know, it just kind of felt old to me, that it was stale, that I'd set a set of rules for myself, and like. Uh-huh. So, like, but I had to do something, so I started going to the figure drawing sessions, which we have at McGuffey Art Center, and right off the bat, I discovered, to my surprise, that I had some talent for it, and so it just kind of became a thing, and I've developed that, and I've developed this kind of more representational style now, and it's, I guess, what people really know me for now, and that was in 2009, so, like, sort of everything that I'm sort of, like, locally known for has been done since then.
Wow. It's really interesting because, again, full disclosure, Russell and I are Facebook friends, and one of the benefits of that is I get to see some of the figure drawing things that you've been posting over the years now, right?
Yeah.
And it's been fun to see how... It's been fun to see both the development of this different style, and also to look at it and try to see some of the old style.
Right. I guess probably creep in a little bit from time to time. Actually, ironically, maybe more now than it did at first, I think. Like, I don't really know why that is, but it just seems to be a little bit somehow.
It seems, when you talk about it, it sounds almost like a meditative act. Am I right?
Well, yes, actually. That's actually one reason I really like it. You know, like, as an artist, it's easy to get sort of wrapped up in your own head, okay? And, like, you know, when you're doing art, you tend to be alone. And so it can be a little crazy making, I have to say, okay, especially if you're kind of a hermit, you know, and spend all day like by yourself. So one of the things that I like about figure drawing is that there's a person there, for one. Secondly, like, they're holding a pose, so you only have a certain amount of time to draw them, right? And so you're necessarily really right there, you're present, you know, and so it's kind of like meditating. I mean, really, you're rooted to the spot, you're not thinking about something else. So yes, it is. It's very relaxing. I love it. Clears your head, you know.
There you go.
Okay, so Clinton and I know you know Clinton's a writer and director, and I'm also a writer and director.
Excellent.
And an actor.
And thank you, Clinton, and an actor. I want to cue in on what you were talking about, art being very solitary, because especially as a writer, I mean, there isn't anybody else in the room.
Sure.
And so I'm wondering how having someone else in the room and having it be so instantaneous, like you have to do it, has that changed not only how you create your art, but has that changed how people look at it?
Huh.
I'm sorry, did I stump you?
No, honestly, I've never really thought about that. Does it change my art and how people look at it?
Yeah, how people look at, like, I mean, you've made the shift
right.
to figures and actually having a person in the room. And I'm wondering if you've heard any feedback from people who have seen your art before and after,
If they've sort of commented on the change somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's odd because I had this whole career before, right? And like, and I had some success. I mean, I even had, you know, like my work in museums and things, and like, and I had a set of collectors, and I don't know, I was kind of getting somewhere with it, you know? And then I had this fundamental shift, and, you know, I hate to say most of those people didn't really come with me. Like some people did. I have a few sort of like hardcore, Russell people, and
right.
they came along, but, which I'm extremely grateful for, but like my old collectors don't really collect my new work, and my old sort of like contacts don't really contact me anymore. I mean, like it very few people who dug the old thing kind of
didn't get into the new thing.
Yeah. And the people who know me now for what I do now they aren't even mostly really even aware of what I did before. For a variety of reasons. I was actually very sick then, so which is another whole story. But I'm not anymore, but like I didn't get out much. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Because it's an interesting thing to me that, you know, artists are always changing and growing, and they're always looking for new ways to express whatever's in their head.
Sure.
So it's always a question of mine, especially because, you know, I've written in several different genres, and they're on Amazon, and I'm looking at who's looking at it, and you know, and I'm thinking, okay, why did that one get more hits than this one?
Mystery to me too. Like it's like you put out something that is your just absolute favorite, okay?
Yes.
And like if you know if Facebook likes are any indication of like you know what
exactly
whether people respond to you know that piece or not, then you know, and then that one, you know, maybe just if few people kind of respond to. And then you put out the one that was like, ah, I wonder if that one's even finished. You know?
Yes.
And you put it out there, and then suddenly it's like 100 likes or something like that. It's like people, that actually happened to me just yesterday. I put a piece up, and it's not that I didn't like it. It just wasn't one that I thought was as distinguished as the others. And man, people just really love that one for some reason. It's a bit of a mystery, but.
Well, and I'm wondering also if it goes back to the fact that nowadays people aren't educated on how to look at art. They are not taught how to objectively look at something and pick things out of it that resonates with them.
Well, you see, I think that is true in the sense that people are not confident in their evaluation of art. They don't have, you know, a whole lot of experience to draw from. They don't have the vocabulary. However, I would also argue that fundamentally, art is not for the art educated, okay?
Right,
I mean, like you know, you want to make work that people respond to in this very sort of intuitive way. And so whether or not a person really knows how to express it, I think it is entirely valid that people who you know would claim to be clueless about it, you know, or just sort of the average person like responds to this or that. I mean, you know, the audience is an integral part of it. You don't say write a song and never play it, or like you know, write a story and never let anybody read it, you know. And so like for art to live, you really do need an audience. And so so your audience's response, it's what they bring to it. And I think that is as good an indication of whether or not a piece of art is successful as whether, you know, as my evaluation of it, certainly. So it's enlightening, really. I try to sort of approach it with an open mind. And if people really like this versus that, well, you know, interesting. I always try to do art that resonates with me. I'm not necessarily doing it for an audience, but it can be, I don't know, it's valid.
Well, and that's the trap that a lot of artists get into, because they start doing art that they know is going to sell instead of doing something that speaks to them.
But you know, it's not as simple as a black and white demarcation between doing art for you and doing art for others. And I think that's what we're talking about. I mean, I love you using the word vocabulary, people having the vocabulary to talk about.
And they act very uncertain if they don't. Now, here's the other thing about being a full-time professional artist is that, I mean, I hate to say it, but you do have to sell your work, right? And you know, and some people would say that's a bad thing, you know, that you could be a sellout if you try to sort of like amend your work a little bit, all right? But I disagree, because art must communicate, right? I mean, it is almost like a language, you know, and so you learn to communicate better, you know, you learn to communicate your ideas through your art and your feelings, you know, and make something that resonates with people, and that's good, right? And now, that said, you know, you can be poor, you know, and that kind of sucks. And I'm always looking for what I call my dogs playing poker, which is, you know, that thing that you could do that like would always sell, that would kind of float all the rest, you know, and I haven't actually found that yet, even though I kind of keep casting around for it. And I'm sure that it will have, and it'll be serendipitous, and like, hopefully it'll be something that my heart is in too. But, you know, you do have to make a living. So,
yeah. You know, having this discussion makes me think right now, we talk about, and we even brought up the old saw that, well, art is solitary, and artists can be solitary creatures. And yes, the creation, in a way, the creation of art can be solitary. But now, just through this conversation, I'm rethinking that. And I don't think artists are actually solitary creatures. Even when we are alone in our studios or in our writing rooms or in the rehearsal room, there's always the thought, especially for performance artists like us, there's always the thought of the audience.
Reaching out, you know, exactly. it's like even somebody like Van Gogh, you know, like who is just like never accepted in his lifetime. I mean, he yearned for it, you know, like he was kind of crying out to the universe, hey, you know, like this is my vision, you know, and like, that's valid. I mean, we're necessarily like social creatures, you know, and we don't like, I mean, if we were alone on an island somewhere with, you know, even if we had all that, say, food and material we wanted, you know, and we didn't have somebody to talk to, man, we would just die. You know what I mean? Like, we need people to communicate with, and like, art is kind of like this. Like I say, it's kind of like a language. It's kind of like you're dredging up your innermost self, you know, your id and your feelings and stuff, and you're just putting it out there. And like,
right.
And like, I don't care what any artist says, you seek acceptance to some extent, you know, or a reaction. Let's just say a reaction, you know.
17 minutes past the hour, you're listening to Homegrown, a show about local art on 94.7 WPBC. And if you're just tuning in, welcome. We're here with a great conversation with local artist Russell Richards. Russell, speaking of communication, speaking of working in different mediums, can we talk about Fiji Mermaid?
Sure. Hey, let me ask you something, though.
Yeah.
Like, how much longer have you and I got? Because I could ramble on and I don't want to. Like, you know, I've got 3 minutes.
We've got probably another 5 minutes.
Okay, cool. So, Fiji Mermaid is a movie that I worked. It was kind of, I don't know, it's an idea that came to me about 4 years ago. It's a movie I shot in 16 millimeter. It was kind of my big labor of love, right? It was also kind of this unbelievable ordeal to make, right? And it just took like everything I had, every ounce of energy and, you know, will to persist to make it.
It looked like it when I saw it, and when I got to the water scenes, I was thinking, "Oh my gosh, Russell, what?"
Yeah, and you know, we filmed that
out for
in 16 millimeter, right? So even like the underwater stuff, we had, you know, like a 16 millimeter underwater movie camera and stuff like that. I mean, it was all just very like technical, and it's funny. It didn't really start off that way. I thought when like I had this idea, I was like, "Oh, that's a simple little movie that I'll make," but no, it was just like, you know, we filmed it on Coney Island. We had these underwater scenes, you know, we did have one scene we shot digitally, this sort of like green screen scene and like stop motion animation and special effects and prosthetic makeups and all kinds of crazy stuff. And anyway, it's about 14 minutes long. You can see it on, if I can plug my website.
Yes, please do. Please do.
You can link to it on my website, RussellRichards.com. Obviously, all one word, with Russell with two S's and two L's. RussellRichards.com. And
that's really smooth. I'm impressed.
Oh, thanks. I've had a lot of practice. So anyway, you can link to it. It's on YouTube. It's not safe for work. And I don't know what else to say about
it. But
it's kind of my labor
of
love.
Art.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's actually it's this movie about this kind of sinister mermaid, and despite the fact that it was kind of this living nightmare making the thing, I'm actually really proud of it.
Yeah, it was interesting watching it, and again knowing being sort of a distant observer of your art over the years, I looked at it and almost felt like I could see a conglomeration of so many things that you've done. Like I could see some of the past figure work that you've done, and at the same time there was with the film there was a more realistic or a naturalistic take.
Yeah.
And at the same time there's something different about it. I mean, did you feel like it was a culmination of a lot of things that it pulled out? Because it seemed to pull out a lot. That, like, for instance, the Fiji Mermaid Stand, you made that, right?
Yeah, well, actually, it was kind of a showcase for my art, too. I mean, one thing that most people don't really know about me is that I have some training in special effects by Dick Smith, this guy who did The Exorcist, this huge sort of special effects artist.
Just a small movie. Like
yeah, like he just kind of is this, you know, Oscar-winning makeup artist and stuff. But like that and like puppetry training and like, you know, just sort of everything that I've been doing over the years sort of ended up in this movie in some way. Like anytime there was some like art or effect or something, it was an opportunity for me to make it, you know. So really this movie is... it's kind of a showpiece for me in that respect, too. So yes.
Very, very cool. So so Clinton sent me the link last night. So I'm sitting in my living room at 11:30, and I get the email, and he's like, here's Russell's movie, watch it. I'm like, okay. So I click on it, and I have not been exposed, like Clinton has, to your previous work. And about 5 minutes in, I'm like, okay, this is really weird.
Oh, good. I'll take that.
It's weird, but you know, captivating. And I was kind of like, okay, wait a minute. How long is this thing? Because I really want to see where this, and how long is he going to take to get to wherever he's going? It was really interesting. And I kept,
oh, thank you.
I kept asking myself, okay, seriously, what is this guy?
Yeah.
What is he after? Like,
right,
you know,
right.
Because it starts out with him looking very forlorn at this picture of this girl, you know, and obviously you read into it and say, oh, he got his
lost
little heart
love.
Broken.
Yeah,
oh,
sure.
Oh, baby. Now he's standing on a bridge. Okay, let's hope he don't jump.
Yeah, exactly.
But then he goes and he looks into this box and becomes like completely captivated.
Yeah, by what he sees inside.
Well,
sure.
by something that in our culture has always been very, very pretty and very, very, you know, very
right.
something that always sucks you in, kind of like a siren.
Right.
But what he sees is not pretty.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a whole history behind that. There's the Fiji mermaids were this 19th century hoax that were, and actually this was kind of the basis of the movie. Like, on sideshows, people like P.T. Barnum would sort of like, you know, sucker the customer into their little, you know, sideshow attraction, right? With this sort of like promise of this sexy, beautiful mermaid on a banner, a advertisement. And they go in, pay their nickel and go in, and instead they would have this little sort of like taxidermized creature. It would be the typically like the torso of something like a rhesus monkey sewn to a fish's tail, right? And even then they tried to sort of sell it as being like a real creature that was being caught in the Fiji Islands,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so I was kind of fascinated by this kind of the dualistic imagery of the beautiful and the grotesque, and also sort of the idea of the bait and switch. Okay.
Right.
So anyway, that's kind of like my, and it's kind of like a metaphor for that. I hope it's not too weird and impenetrable. I tried to make it sort of a mystery.
No, it's not. It's not impenetrable, but it does draw you in. It's you know, the entire time I watched it, I kept like having questions in my head, like, yeah. Okay, where is he going with that? Like, I don't. Oh, okay. Oh, well, looky there.
Well, good. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That was kind of the reaction I was looking for, so that's good to hear. Like,
Mark hit.
Thanks. Thanks.
So, really quickly, you're building a pinball machine?
Yeah, what we said we were going to talk about, the pinball machine.
the thing that I initially contacted you, said, hey, Russell, you want to come on my show and talk about your pinball machine?
I'm building a pinball machine.
That was an awesome segue.
Was it?
Yeah, sure. Actually, I built I designed a pinball machine for a small company, a small startup in North Carolina. It was just like me and two other guys, right? And like we spent 3 years on it, and we have a working prototype, and we're hoping to go into production. And it was a blast. It was like one of the most interesting, fun projects I've ever been a part of. And it's also kind of ongoing. I mean, now we've got to like kind of manufacture it, and there's all kinds of other stuff to do. And so this neat project that hopefully will, you know, hit the arcades before too long, or, you know, some, you know, you might see it placed at some restaurant or something, but we shall see.
Now talk about something that interacts with a public, like
sure,
with an audience.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good thing, and I like that about it. I like it that you can go and play it and enjoy it, you know. It's nice.
Cool. Russell, thank you so much for coming
on
the show. Could you let people know, again, the website where they can go and follow what's going on?
Right. It's RussellRichards.com.
There you go. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
26 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, a show about local art. Stay tuned after this show. And you'll run into the famous Sunday morning wake-up call with your man, Rick Moore. His guest today, Ridge Schuyler from the Charlottesville Works Initiative. And later on at 4 p.m., we're looking at Club del Sabor con DJ Nitro, Charlottesville's only locally produced Spanish language show featuring the sounds of America Latina. How are we doing there, Leslie?
We're doing good. I have a surprise for you.
You have a surprise for me? Should I be worried about the surprise? I should not be worried about the surprise. Okay. All right. And what surprise is this that you have?
Hey, this is Michael Clem. You were listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
Awesome.
Isn't that so great?
You just had that sitting in your quiver all this time, didn't you?
I did. I was waiting to pull it out.
That's great. I feel like we're a real radio show right now. But you know what we really need to be a real radio show?
What do we need?
Well, we need what they told us that we'd have to be a real radio show. Let me, for those of our listeners who do not know this, when we originally pitched this show to the wonderful and fabulous 94.7 WPVC, they said, no way is the show going to work. They said, you need to have, the thing that you're missing is that it factor. It needs to have some grit. It needs to have some dirt. It needs to have some meanness. It needs to be, you need to do like reviews where you tear people down. You need to jump on your guests with gotcha questions. And
well, and you know, that's probably why you asked me to be your co-host, because you know, I regularly bring the mean, but
exactly. No, you are a wonderful, gorgeous, luxurious kitten.
All right, that took a weird turn. Wait.
Both stimulates and enlightens.
Oh my.
But we told them we're much more about bringing people together than we are about tearing people apart, but they said tough, you want to have good radio, you need to have conflict. So this is our friend to friend moment of conflict. Are you ready, Leslie?
I am.
Leslie?
Yes, Clinton.
Where is the door?
Which door?
The door to this room. Where's the door to this room?
It's right behind you. What, are you blind? You came in it.
Really? Because that looks like it's ajar!
Oh, my God.
And that's our friend of our mom. Whew! Man, I felt the conflict there.
I felt something. I don't know if it was conflict, but there was definitely something there.
And let's go to our next guest. We are pleased to have with us from the Ix Art Park, Brian Weimer.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. Brian, do you have an official title? I looked on the website and I saw you listed as Primary Instigator, which I sure hope is your official title because I really like that.
Yeah, that has been sort of the title. I changed it recently to Executive Director because I knew I had to apply for some grants. And Primary Instigator just, you know, was...
They won't give grants to Primary Instigators?
They might. And I don't know. Well, the problem is that I don't consider myself really an artist, and I've done film work, I've done all sorts of other things, but the term artist scares me, because there's an expectation, actually there's a freedom to it, because I also come from the world of theater, and I like roles, and if you call somebody play an artist, you all of a sudden can do all sorts of things that other people aren't allowed to do, and people allow you to do it, they go, oh, well, don't worry about it, he's an artist.
It's okay.
So I should
he's
take advantage of that, but I also don't feel that, like, Russell is somebody who I admire his work, his ability to create something that I couldn't do, that he creates images out of his brain, out of his dreams, out of, you know, his experiences. And I do the same thing sort of with film, but with film as a director, you're just orchestrating people. So you're still orchestrating artists. You have actors, you have set decorators, you have musicians, but it's, to me, film was the greatest kind of compilation of all the arts. So, but still, I'm just behind the scenes saying, go do your thing and I'll make a nice space for you to do it in. And that's sort of what Ix ended up being.
Yeah, I was about to say, talk about creating things. You've created an art park.
Right.
Could you tell, for people who don't know, could you tell them about the Ix Art Park? What is the Ix Art Park?
The Ix Art Park. Another, like, term here. And also, I'm a writer as well, in vernacular and syntax. Like, okay, call it an art park. What does that mean? It comes out of, well, we came up with it in Burning Man. Burning Man is this festival way out in the desert, bunch of lunatics, 50,000 of them, who get together and create a city. It's a real city. It has roads. It has a police force that is called the Rangers. They have sanitation. They have medical facilities. It functions like a real city. 50,000 people. That's bigger than this town.
Yeah.
That gets created
overnight. I have friends in Portland who go every year.
Right. And it runs. And for 10 days, you're part of a city where money has no currency. So your currency is yourself and what you bring to the party, and it's artists. So it's people bringing not just physical art, it's performance art, it's music, as well as food, culinary art. Everything that your whole life demands is there, and you trade it.
Yeah.
And to live in that experience, it is not... I do film, and when I do film, I make stuff up. And I can tell you, okay, you're going to do this, and you're going to do this. At Burning Man, that kind of stuff happens, and nobody's telling anybody to do anything. They're just doing it, and it's life, and it's real. And after about 10 days of that, you say, well, why is my life always not like this? Why do I work in a cubicle? Why do I drive a Uber cab? Why do I whatever? Why do? And it's because of the necessities of, you know, our monetary culture, but that is not the only culture that exists. That is not the only culture that has ever existed. That's just what we do now, and that's what we have agreed to now.
Right.
And I challenge that agreement because I don't agree with it.
I understand.
And I don't think it agrees with me. And I don't think it agrees with a lot of people, because you go out to these things and you discover really who you are and who you want to be. And that's a big, big, big idea. That's not just something you should consider on a Sunday afternoon when you have some leisure time. This is, to me, that was my essential kind of existential. I used to work in advertising in New York. I was very successful. I worked on Snapple, and I wrote Taco Bell commercials and all sorts of things. And it wasn't enough.
Please tell me you weren't responsible for the Chihuahua. Please.
I did a very famous Chihuahua commercial with Godzilla. I think I need a bigger box. I wrote that.
That's okay. Awesome.
Anyway, but I didn't. But that was actually the turning point in my life. I didn't want that to be my epitaph. I think I would need a bigger box. I didn't want people to remember me for freaking Taco Bell Chihuahua commercials. And I didn't want to sell tacos.
Have this image of your funeral, a bunch of Latinos walking back and forth, picketing it outside.
Right.
It's like, maybe he needs a bigger box.
I know. That was going to be my coffin. I think they need a bigger box. So this is actually me redeeming my life and my soul and my being by giving back. And to me, that's what the X Art Park has been for quite some time, is me giving of my time, but also creating a space where other people can give of themselves whatever they have. And in that giving, it is completely reciprocal. There's something karmic that happens there that, to a certain extent, I equate to soup. And I only come up with that yesterday. I was meeting with some people, and there was a guy there who said, "Oh, I don't have an artistic bone in my body." And he goes, "But the other day I made some soup." And I was like, "Okay, so soup as a form of art. Well, can that be?" The other day, the Ix Art Park, by the way, really doesn't have much of a funding base. So a lot of what we do is volunteer base and donation base. So we require, and to me, that's participation. And actually, it's better that way. Because if you come in and you hand me your $10 bill and your $20 bill and we entertain you, that's not communication. To me, if you have to participate in it, then you have to risk something. And in that risk, you give up something, but you get something back, and that's called community. You cannot buy community. You participate in community. And you give to community, and community gives you back to you. So for me, Ix Art Park is creating a cultural, collaborative community. And that's what you experience at Burning Man, that you can't experience anywhere else. Why not?
So what type of things have you had going on at Ix Art Park? Can you give some examples?
Yes. Actually, Russell is a perfect example of that. We have a drink and draw night where, and it's BYOB because we don't have a liquor license. but in that, I would rather do that than, because actually, people just bring stuff and you share of it. The other night, we had this holiday party and we didn't have any budget to, provide things for people, so I said, just bring what you got. I arrived about a half hour before the party with a bag of chips, thinking, oh my God, I haven't planned on anything. I didn't plan music, I didn't plan whatever, but a friend of mine brings in a mic. All of a sudden, Lester Seal brings in a guitar. Two other girls come in, and all of a sudden, there are people playing music. He's singing on stage with two women. Somebody's playing a bass guitar. Somebody's playing a djembe. Somebody else is actually playing a mailbox as a drum. Meanwhile, on the bar, people have collected shrimp and guacamole and chocolates. Somebody brought chocolate mousse. I was just like, wow, and other people were playing games and dancing. And all it was a suggestion and a space. And that's what it is. It's to create a safe space, and things happen. So Russell Richards to say, hey, let's do a drink and draw night. So he comes, he brings his expertise in kind of organizing these things. We have a live model. People sit and draw, and I don't know, 30 people will come and sit together and share this space and this moment and this experience, and then come away from it. You don't have to be a great artist. You don't have to be any kind of artist. You come, you try, and everybody shares what has been done. But to me, that notion of artist, that we are all artists in our own way, and that in that soup notion, that you don't have to make the whole thing. You just have to bring a component of it, and then it will be complemented by somebody else in a way that you didn't expect. And to me, that's life.
So is an art park...
Oh, yeah, we're still getting around to what the hell an art park is. An art park is pendulous.
The definition is just hanging there.
It's just pendulous. About that's what
and
it
there
is.
We go with those P words again.
An art park is a
so.
Space.
An art park is it's like a park, just as the parks that we're used to are these public spaces where people can come and interact and bring of themselves. They can bring their frisbees. They can bring
absolutely
their dogs. They can play games. They can do their cookouts. They're bringing stuff and they are interacting in this public space. An art park is that type of public space for people to come and do art.
Well,
in whole or in part. Oh, yeah, it's okay. You're blind. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I mean, again, art's a loaded word. I mean, I could throw it out there. It's actually a word that scares people, and I would just call it culture. I would call it community. I call it a lot. I call it an art park because I couldn't think of a better name. I mean, we just had to call it something, and actually, Ix Art Park, okay, fine. People can say, let's go to the Ix Art Park instead of, we were going to call it Revolution Park. We were going to call it whatever, and I was like, let's not load it. Let's let other people decide what the heck this place is. But the big part is, and the term is placemaking, is that we took a parking lot in an industrial zone. I mean, the Ix facility used to be a textile factory. It hasn't operated in that as quite some time, but now we had a big empty parking lot. Nothing really happened there. And all of a sudden, because you paint things and because you call it something else and because you use it in a different way, all of a sudden last year we had a March 4th marching band concert that had 3,000 people there experiencing it in a different way, saying, hey, this is an event. This is a venue. It's like, no, it was a parking lot. But all it takes is a change of perspective, and that's the change in perspective you can have in your life, in your neighborhood. We used to, I live in Belmont, and there are a couple street paintings there. One is a big flower, another is a big star. And we painted those there. I lived on Belmont Avenue because we wanted to change what people thought a street was. Is it a street now, or is it art? And then I'm not going to tell you what it is, but kids know, because kids will look at it and behave in a different way. And even motorists will behave in, what is that? I'm driving over. It actually slows traffic. And there's something very pragmatic about it as well. Art is not just something that, oh, we do in our spare time. Art's really what we should do all of the time.
And you also got some pushback from that, because there were people in positions of bureaucracy who said, well, we have a rather fixed idea of what a street is, and that's not fitting into it, right?
Well, to me, I always question, and actually it comes from advertising. You have a brief. The brief says, what are your goals? And I would always question the brief, because the brief would say, we're trying to sell sneakers or whatever. And to me, it's like, no, you're trying to get across a different way of being. And to me, I used to teach marketing at NYU. Nike was a very successful brand because they were not selling shoes. They were selling an attitude that said, just do it. Apple's another one. Apple's not selling computers. It's selling a different mode of thinking. Think different. If Apple came out with a car, you'd buy it because you know that they think differently. If IBM came out with a car, you'd say, you guys make computers. So for me, you're selling a notion, an idea, a way of being. And to me, that is the question of the brief. So when somebody in a bureaucracy says we have to fix the street or we have to replace a bridge, I say change your vernacular. What are you trying to accomplish? You're trying to move cars over a thing? That could be a lot of different things. It could be a skyway. It could be a tunnel. It could be at grade crossing. It could be whatever. But let's remove when you're looking at Friendship Court, which is right next to the Ix property.
Which is right next to the Ix property.
Are you going to call it public housing? Can we not call it that? Because we all have an idea of what public housing is. Let's take that off the board. Let's call it something else. Let's call it a neighborhood. Let's call it a community. Let's call it a collaborative collection. Let's call it just something else that doesn't bring you to the place that we have been before that perhaps does not work as well as something else. I like to play a lot of what if. And the more you play what if, you get to places that you don't even imagine were possible. And to me, that's the big thing about the Ix Art Park, is it challenges the possible. We have a big mural. It says Dream Big. And that's the notion that we are not living right now what we could be. Dream that dream, manifest it now, and you do it collaboratively. You can't do it alone. And that's, to me, the artist. There are work. You can be a Jackson Pollock, and you can hide yourself away and drink some booze and make some amazing freaking art. And some of the best art probably has to be made that way. I don't work that way. I have to work with people.
Uh-huh. So is there programming for the Ix Art Park?
Yes.
Is this, all right.
I mean, program, that's my job this year. I decided to stop making films for a year and just run the art park. So within that, I mean, we've got our drink and draw nights. We just got our grant to do our fall concert series, 10 free concerts in the fall, just like we did this year. I'm going to bring a farmer's market.
Yeah, how was that concert series? Because I remember seeing that from the outside. How'd it go this year?
We had 14,000 people eventually that came to a parking lot to go enjoy free entertainment. And to me, it is keeping it free. That's a very important thing for me. As much as possible to have no barriers for entry, to get the immediate communities to participate in it, the communities beyond that. But to me, it's not just about Charlottesville. This is about the state. This is about the country. This is about the planet. Can you create something that is a world first? Something that people gravitate toward because it's unique and nobody's done that before. And people have done other sorts of things, but let's reach beyond what we think. Oh, it'll be a park. I'll have some bushes, maybe plant some flowers. No, let's make a Stargate, man. Let's take ourselves to a different dimension, because that's the place. That is Oz. That is Pepperland. That is Narnia. That is all these places that we fantasize about being. And I don't think that those places... I was in the Cotswolds this summer in England. It's this little area next to or beyond London to towards Wales. And you walk through it, and all of a sudden, you're in a Beatrix Potter storybook, and you realize that you've been robbed, because that storybook exists. Those English gardens blow your mind, and you say, wow, what did I accept? Why did I accept, you know, a strip mall or a whatever, to say that, no, these places are real. I was in Rome, I was in Paris, I was in Portugal, I was in Copenhagen. I experienced so many other things for this year. I just spent a year abroad. That we have so much more to experience in this world. And I challenge everybody out there to please push yourself and to come down and push other people. I mean, you said, you know, we're going to have a challenging radio show. We need to challenge each other, not in a nice way. Challenge each other with love. Challenge each other with patience and compassion. I don't know. I get off on my thing. So back to programming. Summer Olympics we're going to have. We're going to have opera in the park. We're going to have theatrics. We actually have a black box theater in there. We're going to do a circus. We're going to do a thing called Makeout Mondays, where we have people talk about intimacy. I mean, we're challenging all of the sort of notions of our culture.
I like
relationships.
That.
I mean, really, everything's on the table here. We have a safe space. Pride, I've been talking to, and they're going to do a youth program there, because I'm like, it's the perfect thing. Here are these kids who are wondering who they are, trying to figure out themselves. Well, here's a space that is figuring out itself. And guess what? We're all figuring out ourselves.
Yes.
We think we have figured out ourselves, but I know from acting, I'm playing a role.
Right. Everywhere.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I can change that role. That's the great thing. I can be somebody different. I can do something different. I can create a different community. Nothing is set in stone. So that is the great thing about it's an art park. Well, what is it? What is art? What are you? You know, you come down to this space and rethink everything, because I mean, look at our culture, really. I mean, are we, is this, and we have a lot of hegemony of like, this is the culture that we want to export everywhere. Is this the best culture ever? Can we do better?
Yeah. Yeah. And we should do better.
Yeah.
And we should want to do better.
Right.
Yeah. That's so cool. Makeout Mondays. That's cool.
There you go. Oh, we're going to have food trucks. I want to do a food truck Fridays. We have a game night. That's a big thing here that I'd like. If there's one thing that comes out of this, donate. If you have games in your closet, in your basement, in your attic, bring them. We're going to have a game night there, because I've seen how games are a great way to interact with people in a non-conventional manner, that it has rules, but the rules are fun. And it doesn't matter who wins at the end of the day.
Right, because you just had this
right?
Because you had this cool experience with people that you may not have met any other way.
Right. And I've experienced it was in Copenhagen. There was this bar that was a game cafe, and everybody was playing Risk and Monopoly and all sorts of other stuff, but just in a sort of free manner. And you just come, and people would put a little flag on their thing if they needed a new player. And so you could come in all by yourself and just sit down with some complete strangers and be playing a game. And that's what we're going to start doing as well.
Cool.
Hey, this is Michael Clem. You were listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
Minutes past the hour, if you're just tuning in. We're talking with Brian Weimer, executive director and primary instigator of the X Art Park. I throw that in because you're instigating some stuff.
Well, I want to add to that. I say I'm primary instigator, and that's only because I'm the first person to start doing stuff there. Now, I think everybody's an instigator, and to me, everybody's got an idea. So I would say go instigate. Come talk to me, because I'm somebody who says yes to everything. I will try anything once. If you, and a big part of it is budget for us, so if it costs a whole lot or whatever, then we probably can't do it unless you bring in some money or resources. So to me, that's why it is pain.
Right, so, and it's interesting that you bring up budget, because it seems to be that there's a really interesting tension between what you're talking about, because you're dedicated to keep it free, to keeping it free. You're inspired by Burning Man, this city and this culture that develops a non-commercial way of interacting, and at the same time talking about reality. I mean, you're talking about changing reality and finding reality. You know, the reality of this show, for instance, or the reality of me in this show is I can only be here. I mean, this is, I like being here. I love being here. I think this is a cool show. I hope you out there think it's a cool show. I hope you tell other people to listen to it. But the reality of me being here, I can only be here because I work my keister off the rest of the week.
Well, here's another piece, and it may come as a surprise, but those rules don't necessarily have to apply. And some of it can be very pragmatic. You can say art, well, that's just sort of when we have the luxury to do so. Art, to me, is just a creative way of living. And artists, we all know, are starving. Artists also have to be plumbers and electricians and things like that because they live in fixer-upper houses. Now, one of the things that we're doing now is we're bringing a repair cafe. People bring your broken appliances, your whatever, and there's a community there that'll help you fix them. Because it's all about an equation. Now, there's money in and there's money out. If there's less money out, you don't have to work as hard. If there is a community that you don't have to pay a $40 ticket price to come in and be entertained and it's free, that's less money out. If we bring in, and the other part is employment, but guess what? The things that create art, woodworking skills, welding skills, mosaic skills, concrete, every material that you can work with, those are all trade skills. And we have people who work within them. We're going to be doing workshops to teach those. And those will be life skills. If you want to apply them to art, if you want to change your career, that's why you have so many makers now who are finding that they can do things that they can do for other people. And you can sell them to them or you can trade them. And actually, it was a wonderful moment. Actually, we're starting to have a farmer's market there. I don't want to compete. I love the city market, but we'll probably end up doing one on a Sunday. But recently, Free Union Grass Farm started setting up there. And I stopped by, and Daniel and his jams was there, and there was another person selling tea. And I was like, wonderful that they even came because we had a conversation but hadn't solidified, and they just said, oh, we'll just show up. And I'm like, do that. Just show up. Try to get in contact with me. Don't do anything too crazy and dangerous, but show up. And while I was there, they were, you know, Dan was like, here, have some jam. It's got my email on it. And I was like, wow, I just walked through. And because I said, yes, I got some jam. And that's not going to pay the bills necessarily, but all these things, the food we eat, the clothes we wear on our back, the other parts that kind of we have to pay for and we have to work for, let's start working less at the things that we don't want to do and working towards the things that we do want to do, and you'll find that the economics start working in your favor.
Wow, Brian, challenging ideas. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to have you back because clearly there's much more to talk about. Clearly there's much more to think about here. But thank you very much. Tell people where they can go to find out what's going on at the XR Park.
Facebook is our primary place. Go to Facebook, XArt Park, or else you can go to xartpark.com. And I know that we have to reach out in other ways other than just the internet, so just come down. Come down to the XArt Park. Do something. Bang on the instruments there. Bring a game. Bring yourself. Bring your kids. Just participate. That's the most important part. Just be part of it.
Great. Thank you very much, Brian.
Thanks.
All right. 53 minutes past the hour, coming to the end of our time with you. Remember, after this is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with Rick Moore. His guest today is Ridge Schuyler from the Charlottesville Works Initiative. And then at 4 o'clock, it's Club de Sabor con DJ Nitro, el programa de radio in unico producido localmente en español in Charlottesville con la música de América Latina. And now we are here at probably everyone's favorite part of the show. It is Leslie's weekly rant.
Oh, thank you, Clinton. All right, so it's a new year. Traditionally, on the first morning of a new year, we drag ourselves out of bed after a night of alcohol and debauchery and proceed to make a list. We make a list of things we have determined we're going to do differently. We're going to lose weight, stop smoking, cut out caffeine, we're going to go back to school. We're going to do more charity work. We're going to be better people, right? That's what all of this is about. We're supposed to make a list, and once we've crossed off everything on that list, we'll be better, right? We'll be healthier and stronger, nicer and more worthy people. It's a nice concept. It's a very nice thought. And most of us were taught that is the thought that counts, right? Well, it doesn't. Having a good thought just means your logic center works. Being a good person, a better person, requires action. Bear with me while I paraphrase for a moment. All that is required for mediocrity to triumph is for good artists to do nothing. It's what happens when we see something not up to snuff and we let it slide. It's what happens when we don't let our colleagues know what we really think because we don't want to hurt their feelings. And it most certainly happens when we decide we won't create something because it may be controversial or uncomfortable for the audience. As artists, we are used to rejection. We hear no more than we hear yes. And that happens on a grander scale than the average bear for us. I'm not talking about the outside voices. I mean the inside ones, too. There's always that nagging voice inside us that says, no one will like it. No one will want to see it. No one will understand it. And at times, that voice may be true. It may be right. And those are the times we need to push harder. When no one gets it, we need to ask more questions. Show it to more people. Push and pull and remold it until it's resonating at the speed we need it to. No doesn't really mean no. It means I haven't made you think hard enough yet, so you can say no. I need to ask you a question so difficult and brain-shattering that you can't help but pause and think. And once you do that, I've got you. Once you stop and not only try to answer my question, but posit questions of your own, my work is done. So let's add one more resolution to your list. For all the artists out there, I ask that in 2016, you use your art to pose a question to your audience. It'd be great if it were a question you didn't really have an answer to. Ask it. See what you get back. Wait for the reply you get to change how you view your art and then improve it accordingly. Because we all know, there's no artistic endeavor that is finished. It just continues to grow. Even if we, its creator, is finished with it, the audience picks it up and continues the life of it. So go out there and make something that will shock and awe them. Make something that will tear them to bits. Make something that will tear at their heartstrings or make them pee themselves because they're laughing so hard. Do that. Make 2016 the year that your art impacts the world. And if it doesn't, it's still okay. Because I'll bet if the world doesn't know about it, there will be someone whose life is changed because of it. Even if that someone is you. And that's the Weekly Rant.
Really? Really?
You have a problem with that?
Yet another impassioned plea against the minions of mediocrity. You know what I think you are? I think you actually turn out to be an artistic elitist. That's what I think you turn out to be.
Oh, I'm an artistic elitist because I want people to challenge themselves?
Not everybody can be challenging themselves and pushing themselves against
But everybody should.
Everybody should schmud. You know, there are limits. There are borders that can't be crossed.
There are walls that
can't be struck down.
I don't think there are.
There are actual hardcore fundamental rules that say yes and no in this world. I mean,
I don't believe in rules.
I'm glad that you're writing in on your strawberry shortcake dream unicorn about things like this. But the fact is that some people, they can just get by doing the things that they can get by doing. I mean, come on.
Really?
Yeah, really. I'm so tired that I have to sit here and listen to all these pie in the sky. You know, I'm totally, God, jeez, freaking weak.
Okay, don't slam, he slammed the door. I didn't really think that was going to get him so upset, but apparently I was wrong. All right, well, you know, he'll get over it, I promise. He'll be back next week. So I want to thank Russell Richards and Brian Weimer for coming to talk to us today. It was an awesome conversation, and I hope they both would like to come back and talk to us because they were awesome. Stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call coming up in just a few minutes. But that's it for our time. Thank you so much for listening to Homegrown, and you guys have a great week.